Hello, everybody. Mark Carlson here, SNEA Technical Council Co-Chair. Welcome to the STC Podcast. Every week, the STC Podcast presents important technical topics to the storage developer community. Each episode is hand-selected by the SNEA Technical Council from the presentations at our annual Storage Developer Conference. The link to the slides is available in the show notes at snea.org/podcasts. You are listening to STC Podcast, episode 146.
My name is Devendra Das Sarma. I lead the IO Technologies and Standards Group at Intel. I'm a co-chair of the CXL Technical Task Force and have been leading CXL since its inception. I will be delving into Compute Express Link, which is also abbreviated as CXL. So when we look at the industry landscape today, we see some very clear mega trends emerge. Cloud computing has become ubiquitous. Networking and edge computing is using the cloud infrastructure, and it has also become ubiquitous. AI and analytics to process the data is driving a lot of innovations across the board. All of these are driving the demand for faster data processing. We see increasing demand for heterogeneous processing as people want to deploy different types of compute for different applications. So whether it is general purpose CPUs, GPGPUs, custom ASIC, or FPGA, each is important and best suited to solve some class of problems. There is enough volume to drive customized solutions in each of these segments. And increasingly, we see people deploying a combination of these different types of compute in their platform, depending on their needs. In addition to the demand for heterogeneous computing, we also see the need for increased memory capacity and memory bandwidth in our platforms. Significant technical innovations in storage class memories have also resulted in those memories approaching DRAM-like latency and bandwidth characteristics while maintaining non-volatile characteristics, and also they have larger capacity. So we have a class of memory between DRAM and SSD that needs to be thought of as a separate memory tier. This tier offers compelling value proposition due to its performance, capacity, and persistence. So for example, now we could store an entire database in this new memory, and that makes search faster, and we could do a lot more of AI and analytics type of applications. So these mega trends that we are discussing here, it takes advantage of these types of memory in addition to the evolution that we are going to see in the traditional DRAM memory and storage, plus the heterogeneous computing. Compute Express Link is defined ground up to address these challenges in this evolving landscape by making the heterogeneous computing as well as these different types of memory efficient, and it has been designed to sustain the needs of the different compute platforms for many years to come. So the question is, why do we need a new class of interconnect? So if you look at the picture on the top, right, this represents a typical system today. So you got CPU, you got memory that is attached to the CPU, which is typically DRAM, and those get mapped as coherent memory. Now, for coherent memory, data consistency is guaranteed by hardware. The memory that is attached to a PCI Express device, on the other hand, it is also mapped into the system memory, but it is mapped as uncached memory, so or memory mapped IO space. So the memory attached to the CPU is different in its semantics than the memory that is attached to an IO device. So when the CPU wants to access its DRAM, it simply caches the data, accesses the data from its local cache, later on does a write back if it has updated the data. On the other hand, the memory that is attached to the IO device, it cannot be cached, it's an uncached memory. So when a CPU has to access it, it does so using load store semantics, but that load store semantics always has to traverse to the entire hierarchy and access the device for every access. So similarly, when an IO device, it wants to do a read or a write from the system memory, it does that through what is known as the PCI Express DMA mechanism. So if you are an I/O device, typically you are connected into the CPU. The CPU would have a write cache. And whenever it gets a write, DMA write from the I/O device, it basically goes ahead and does the fetching of that cache line using the caching semantics. And it does the protocol translation between the producer-consumer ordering model and then the ordering model that exists in the system memory. So it does the merge of the data and then it can do the write back. The I/O device is not allowed to cache any of the system memory. It always has to issue explicit reads and writes to the host in order to get access to that memory. On a read, the CPU simply does, the root port simply goes ahead and asks for a snapshot, coherent snapshot of the data and provides it to the device. Now, this is the producer-consumer ordering model. It really works well for a wide range of I/O devices, has worked really well over the last 2+ decades. And it's really good when performing bulk transfer, so such as those involved with traditional storage or moving data in and out of a networking interface. It's very efficient, works really well. And we definitely want to preserve that kind of DMA model going forward for those usages. However, things like accelerators, for example, they want to do fine-grained sharing of data with the processor. And then in that case, the PCI Express mechanism, it needs to be augmented with some extra semantics. So that will allow these devices to be able to cache the data from the CPU. And also, by the same token, if they have memory attached to them, be able to map all or some of that memory into the system's coherency space. And that's basically what CXL allows. So if we fix those, effectively, all of these things that we had in the red here, those, of course, will be prevalent. They will continue to exist. But in addition to that, we enable write-back memory on the device side. We enable direct memory load store on behalf of the device where the device can cache the data. And similarly, your PCI DMA, if you're a pure PCI device, right? If you do PCI DMA, whatever that looks like is also going to look very similar if you are doing DMA directly into the memory that is attached to this new CXL enabled environment. So in summary, this allows us for doing efficient resource sharing. We can share memory pools across different devices, devices across the system, different types of compute elements can work on problems collaboratively without having to effectively transfer the entire data and then a flag to tell whoever they're partnering with that they're done with the processing. They can just work through all of these accesses in a very seamless manner. But for this to happen, what we really need is an open standards so that the industry can innovate on this, on these common set of standards. And together, we should be able to then get the best performance, power efficient performance in the compute systems that we have. So that's basically the proposition of Compute Express Link. So this is an overview of the CXL consortium. If we look into, back in March of 2019, when we went public with the CXL consortium, to now we have more than right now, this is 100 plus members. I believe it is more than 123 members now, and it's growing rapidly. And this entire membership, it reflects the width of the industry and then the depth of the industry, and it's very essential for us to create this vibrant ecosystem. And Compute Express Link is not a one-time thing. It is going to evolve. And there are work groups, technical work groups, 5 technical work groups that are developing the next generation of CXL 2.0 specification in a backwards compatible manner. And this journey continues as more and more problems come through. We are going to go ahead and address them. And of course, we are going to go through the speeds and feeds adjustment in order to meet the demand. So that's, in a nutshell, what is CXL? And these are the board of directors. You can go to the Compute Express Link website to get more details. So now let's get into an overview of what Compute Express Link is all about. So Compute Express Link is looking at the system outside in. So you can see that this is a data center, right? You access, there are a bunch of networking connections. You have a whole lot of racks in a data center. Within each rack, you've got a lot of chassis. And in each chassis, is like there is a system which is one or more CPUs connected through a coherent, symmetric cache coherency protocol. They have their own memory. There will be I/O devices. This is where CXL fits in. It is defining a new protocol semantics to work at this level, and you know, tightly coupled with the CPUs between accelerators and memory. And as I said, this is, and we'll see that this leverages PCI Express and targeted for AI, machine learning, HPC, comms, and a variety of emerging applications. So what is CXL? CXL is basically based on PCI Express infrastructure. So if you think of this is a processor, you got I/O link, PCI Express link. This is PCI Express 5 going through a x16 PCI Express connector. And you can plug in either a PCI Express x16 card or you can plug in a CXL card. It will work either way. PCI Express is the ubiquitous interconnect technology across the entire computes continuum. It spans everything from your handheld, laptop, desktop, server, comms, you name it, right? So that's the reason that, you know, it's present everywhere. PCI Express 5.0 defined the alternate protocol mechanism. So Compute Express Link sits on top of that. So this way, what happens is you get a flexible port. Let's say in my system, I have 5x16 slots. I could choose to put in all 5 as x16 PCIe cards, or I could choose to put in all 5x16 CXL cards, or I could choose any combination thereof, depending on the user's needs. So by keeping it in this particular way where it is completely interoperable, you are offering users the choice. Otherwise, you had to give them dedicated slots, and that causes more real estate, more power, more area, and more pins on the CPU. Not the best way to make progress, right? So, you know, we truly believe in this plug and play. And PCI Express, as I said, has the alternate protocol mechanism. So fundamentally what happens is when it comes up, when the link comes up, we run at 8B, 10B encoding with PCI Express 2.5 gig. Very early on, the CPU is going to query to the device saying, I support CXL, do you support CXL? If the device says, yes, I support CXL, we are going to talk CXL. If the device says, I don't know what it is, in which case it's not going to respond, we will simply go ahead and move with PCI Express. So, and, you know, by the time your even the link comes up through just the Gen 1 RAID, very early during the training, you are decided whether it is PCI Express or whether it is CXL, and it is done dynamically. So you could have a slot. The same slot can have a PCI Express today, or in somebody else's system, the same slot can have CXL. It will work plug and play. And CXL usages are expected to be the key driver for more data rate in PCI Express. And we believe this will be one of the lead usage models for PCIe 6.0 data rate transition. So we basically reuse everything on the PCI Express side. We reuse the, you know, the PCI Express link training. We use the circuits, the channels, the everything, and we'll see a more detailed picture of this coming up. So this one talks about how do different CXL protocols coexist. So if you look into this picture here, we have three types of protocols that that run with CXL, and they all run on top of the PCI Express infrastructure. So CXL consists of these three protocols: CXL.io, CXL.cas, and CXL.memory. CXL.io is the I/O part of the stack. This is almost identical to PCI Express. We use it for discovery, configuration, register access, interrupts, virtualization, and most importantly, the bulk DMA with producer-consumer semantics. More or less identical to PCIe, and it is mandatory in CXL. So that part is there, right? As we said, PCIe 5, PCIe or CXL log 5, there are some modifications that are needed to do the alternate protocol negotiation that I talked about. Same thing on the other side. Now let's look into the other two protocols. So you got CXL.CAS. This is optional for a device. It allows a device to be able to cache the system memory. So memory that is attached to the system, host memory, this is the coherent memory. So CXL.CAS will allow the device to access that memory, store it in the local cache, and effectively have the same kind of caching agent functionality that a core might have, CPU core might have. CXL.memory protocol is also optional for a device. And what it does is, if the device has memory attached to it, the device can choose to allocate a portion or all of it or none of it to be mapped into the system memory space as coherent memory. So that way, the CPU can access that part of the memory using the same types of semantics that it would if it were accessing host memory. So, CXL.CAS, CXL.mem, and then CXL.io, they all go through their own independent stacks, but they get multiplexed at the file level. And CXL specification defines FLITS as the basic unit of transfer. It dynamically multiplexes these three protocols. Our size, basic unit of size for CXL transfer is 528 bits. So what this allows us to do is, if a device is, let's say, doing a large DMA, 512 byte DMA, let's say, 512 bytes of DMA, then I got, let's say, the CPU is issuing a snoop into the device. So we don't want that snoop to be stuck behind a 512 byte payload, because our FLIT sizes are small. They are, as I said, 528 bits, which is about 66 bytes. At that FLIT boundary, we can pause the DMA transfer, send the snoop to the device, and then resume back to DMA bulk transfer that we were doing. So all of these are provided in CXL. The FLITs are protected by a 16-bit CRC. And as on the IO side, of course, we have the same link level CRC on top of that. So now let's talk a little bit about CXL features and the benefits that it offers. CXL has been designed ground up for low latency. And we'll talk through this in terms of the stack, right? So each of these three critical usages, they have their own latency critical elements into it. So, if it is the IO part of the stack, it's identical to PCI Express. So, we made some enhancements into the link layer and the transaction layer so that it can operate in a CXL.io environment. These are fairly small changes, things like, you need to be able to pause things, you need to be able to break things on a FLIT boundary, all of those, right? CXL.CAS and CXL.mem, that's optimized for latency, and that fundamental FLIT size is the FLIT size in the CXL protocol. And these transactions, as you can see, we multiplex just before we hit the logical PHY. So, we talked about how we can interrupt a 512 byte or a large payload size for performance critical one. And that way, that helps us with the latency. Now, let's look into an alternate approach that we could have taken, which we didn't, right? We could have done the multiplexing between these different protocols at the transaction layer level, go through the PCI link layer. Now, there are two issues with that from a latency point of view. First of all, for the 512 byte example that I gave, if I have a snoop, I have to really wait for that particular transaction to end before I can send my transaction. Whereas here, I don't have to do that. I just have to wait till the FLIT boundary, and the FLIT boundary is a much more smaller 64 byte or 66 byte granularity. 2 bytes is for the CRC. the other thing is that PCIe, since it deals with variable packet sizes, the link layer, I mean, you can have up to 4 TLPs in a given clock cycle, assuming it's 1 gigahertz with the Gen 5 data rate by 16. And you can have a TLP that can go across multiple cycles. So the CRC logic, for example, has to be able to deal with all of those. Consequently, it has a lot of pipeline stages and it's built in throughout the whole thing. It works really well for PCIe and it is really well suited for that. It's really optimized for that. But coherent traffic works on a cache line basis. It's more or less small packets. It's not very efficient from that point of view from a PCIe link layer, especially to go through those latency. Whereas if we go through a dedicated link layer here, we can really cut through all of those latencies. Flit sizes are fixed, CRC sizes are fixed. So that causes a lot of efficiency in terms of how quickly we can get to the latency numbers that we want. So the question is, how much of latency are we targeting? What is good enough for us, right? And the answer is very simple. We want for CXL CAS and CXL MEM, those latencies to be in the same ballpark as what we would if we were doing a symmetric CAS coherency protocol. So we gave some guidance in the CXL specification. For example, if you are a device and you get a snoop request on the pin, then we expect you to return the response for that snoop. Basically, I don't have the line, invalid is the response, right? You'll come back with that within 50 nanoseconds, 50, right? Pin to pin. So that's fairly aggressive. And we can do that because we have this structure here. Similarly, if I'm giving a memory read request here and then the device has got either HBM memory or a DDR memory, it is supposed to respond with the data starting at 80 nanoseconds. So pin-to-pin latency is 80 nanoseconds is what is given in the spec. Now, you can say that, hey, what about storage class memories? Because those have higher latencies and that's fine. That's not an issue. We have a reporting mechanism, HMAT kind of table, where you will say what kind of memory you have so that the system software is aware what kind of a device you have, what kind of latency you have, and map the memory to your space accordingly. CXL, it's an asymmetric protocol. So the protocol flows and the message classes are different between the host processor side and the device side. This has been a conscious decision to keep the protocol simple and the implementation easy. And I'll go through that reasoning. We have experience with enabling the industry with symmetric CAS coherency protocols. Invariably, you will find a lot of excitement initially and then the vast majority of them, okay, 90%+ in my experience, basically just do not make it to the finish line because of the complexity, because of the huge design effort, validation effort. And most importantly, what happens is symmetric CAS coherency protocols changes over time. So doing something that is backwards compatible becomes a challenge. Now let's look into each component. Why is that the case? Host processor, it has a mechanism to orchestrate CAS coherency between its multiple caching agents, right? It has got cores, it has got home, it has got, I've not shown here, but PCI Express root ports, all of that. It might have peer CPUs that it is connected through in using a symmetric CAS coherency protocol link. So it has to deal with orchestrating. And I want to emphasize on the word orchestrating CAS coherency between multiple caching agents. So typically this involves you'll take the request, you'll resolve any conflict, you're going to start tracking CAS lines. So this is what is known as home agent functionality. And that's what is represented here in this diagram. That's the complicated piece. That's the one that is very tied to the individual microarchitecture. That's the one that changes from generation to generation. Consumption side, which is the caching agent, that's relatively straightforward. And I've not seen very many generations of CPU. I've worked in two companies for more than two decades. I have not seen very many, actually I have not seen any CPU work with its predecessor CPU using its cache coherency link. And there are very good technical reasons why it doesn't. On the other hand, from a device perspective, if it needs to cache, right, it has to cache something because it has a need, it has a performance benefit that it can gain because it has to cache something. But it really is not in the business of orchestrating cache coherency between different cores or between other caching agents or other accelerators that might be there. So there is no need for the device side to get bogged down in terms of orchestrating cache coherency by having a home agent functionality, which is complex and, as I said, changes across generations. So what the CXL specification does is it abstracts away. It says that home agent functionality, you CPU or you host processor, you are dealing with it in any way. So use whatever you do. I'm just going to provide you with a simple set of abstracted cache coherency commands, and those are similar to what you would find in a messy protocol. So things like, you know, I want to read this cache line, you know, I want to read it shared, I want to read it private, all of those, right? If I updated a cache line, I want to do a write back. And, you know, occasionally I might get a snoop, in which case I give a response as a snoop. That's pretty much what we need. We don't need any of these, you know, how do I resolve conflicts across multiple caching agents and all of those things, right? So that basically keeps it simple. Now, on the same token, if I have memory, I really am not in the business, or I should not be in the business of orchestrating cache coherency. That's on behalf of the CPU. All I do is, there is a read to that memory location, I provide the data. You want to write something to the memory location, I write the data, right? It's just, I'm trying to do the best I can to manage the memory and do the lowest latency possible that I will have. So contrast that with a symmetric cache coherency protocol where it is all, you know, every side is a peer, they have got caching agents. So this is what basically, as I said, it's a very deliberate decision. It's to keep things simple for the developers, keep things simple for the accelerators providers, for the memory expansion providers. And in any case, the CPU needs to orchestrate cache coherency, as we talked about. So, you know, keep things where they really belong, right? Now, I did mention that, you know, there is the CXL.memory allows for a device side, right? So host memory is mapped mostly into the coherent memory space, but in the case of a device, it can be mapped either into its, for its local usage, and or part of it can be mapped into the system. So the two sides, so the two different views of how things can be. And as I said, you can have like a part of the memory that is in one type and the other part would be on the other type. It's really up to the device how much it's to map into the system memory space. Now, if the device owns the memory, it is not mapped into the coherent memory space in the system, then that is what is known as the device bias. So in the device bias, what happens is the memory is still mapped into the system memory space, but it is mapped as memory mapped IO or uncached. So anytime the CPU wants to access that memory, it does that through using an uncached flow, just like it does today in PCI Express. The picture on the right, even though the memory physically resides with the device, it's really mapped into the system memory space. So the home agent in the host processor is in charge of that memory. So even if the device wants to access its memory, it has to go through the home agent and then it can come back and take the data. And that is because you want to make sure that, you know, when you're accessing a location, nobody else has it, right? You have the right coherency semantics built into it. And you can flip the biases for a given location between these two. And even if you didn't get it right, by construction, CXL protocol is such that it will be, it's going to work properly in the sense that data consistency will be still guaranteed. Now let's talk a little bit about some of the use cases of CXL. So what you see in this picture are three types of devices. The leftmost one is a type 1 device. Type 1 devices are used for, they use the CXL.io and CXL.cast semantics. And we have provided some sample, some example usages like a smart NIC that can benefit from caching. Now, if the smart NIC implements a partition global address space, PGAS, it needs to ensure that the ordering model is preserved. Now, note that PCIe has got producer-consumer ordering model. So that mandates that writes be able to bypass prior reads to avoid deadlocks in the PCIe hierarchy. So this is known as posted transactions bypassing non-posted transactions. That can cause a problem with the PGAS model when two strongly ordered transactions cannot complete out of order. So the way to work around this ordering issue is to serialize access when which can result in performance implications. Now, if you have CXL.cast, the NIC can simply cast these locations, prefetch them, because since the beauty of cache coherency is that you can prefetch the locations, and you know when you retire the transactions or when you do the write, as long as it has not been snooped out, you are guaranteed that that data is still there with you. And then in that case, it just needs to complete the transactions in order in its local cache. Now, another type of usage for type 1 device is around the atomics. Now, increasingly, applications are using advanced atomic semantics involving floating point operations. Any standard I/O protocol, such as PCI Express, can be enhanced to support these natively. In fact, PCI Express has got some amount of atomic semantics. Now, to the usage of these atomics semantics, it evolves so fast, right? By the time you get to specify and get to an implementation on the CPU side, on the device side, that can take years, which slows down innovations. On the other hand, if you have CXL.cast, you can simply get ownership of that line, perform any complex atomic semantics that you want by keeping ownership of that data. And then there you are done. You don't really need to make sure that somebody else has to implement atomics the way you envision them to. The middle type of device is what is known as a type 2 device. So this typical usages are your GPGPU and FPGAs for dense computing. Now these devices may have some amount of local memory attached to them, and that's used for their computation, but then they can also be mapped into the system space. And we expect these type 2 devices to implement all three protocols. Now, the caching and memory semantics would be used to populate and pass operands and results back and forth between the computing entities with very low latency and high efficiency. So this is where you would use the bias flipping, you'd crunch on some data, and then you would just tell the CPU to come pick it up, right, without having to send an entire set of data and flag and all of that. It's just local. Same way the CPU crunches something, you basically can get unfettered access without having to go through explicit synchronization that, hey, here is the data, here is the flag kind of a thing. Third type on the right is a type 3 device, and the usage would be memory bandwidth expansion, memory capacity expansion, and storage class memory. Now, these only need to implement the CXL.io and CXL.memory semantics. This memory will be mapped to system memory as coherent memory. But then the host processor orchestrates the cache coherency, as we mentioned earlier. The devices doesn't have to know anything about coherency flows. All it does is it simply has the memory semantics, which is a set of reads and writes. It doesn't even need to implement CXL.cast. So what we are doing with CXL is that we are enabling a lot of capabilities with some very simple extensions on top of PCI Express. And the purpose of this is to make sure that the ecosystem can really innovate and can build some really good either accelerators or memory expansion devices or what have you. These are very powerful constructs, very simple constructs, and the barrier for entry is fairly minimal because all the main things like PCI Express, PHY, and all of those are all taken care of, right? You can get that. You have that anyway. And on top of that, these are a handful set of semantics that you need to implement and get the benefit, and you don't have to orchestrate cache coherency and all of that. So for example, I can imagine that somebody will build either a in-memory or near-memory processing by doing type 2 device. You got a bunch of memory attached to the device on the other side. You want to do some kind of search or whatever it is that you want to do on that memory. And then you can work very collaboratively with the processor that it, you know, you got very high bandwidth access to that type of memory, and all of that doesn't need to really cross the wire. And you can provide with a very valuable solution to a particular problem that you are trying to solve, right? I mean, you can speed up database accesses, you can do a bunch of things with, because you've got caching semantics built into the protocol along with the memory semantics. So it's a very powerful construct that we are enabling the industry with. So now let's look into, you know, what we started off by saying, right? I mean, why a new interconnect and see how well we did, right? I hope I convinced you that, you know, the memory that is attached to the device is write-back memory, because you have map, use CXL.mem semantics to map that. Because of CXL.cas, you could do memory load and store, just like the way a CPU core would do. And if the PCIe DMA, if just like it is happening to the memory attached to the CPU, if you were to do peer-to-peer access, it looks very similar. So we have, in addition to the existing load store semantics, we have been able to bring these into picture. And this will result in, if I'm operating between different sites, I could do efficient population of operands and results, and you could borrow memory resources, right, when you need to work on something. And you could do a bunch of things like user kernel level data access and data movement. And, you know, all of these are very low latency, as we talked about, extremely low latency, latency similar to cache coherent symmetric multiprocessing system, which is, by the way, which are much smaller than a PCIe load store type of latency. PCIe load store latency is itself small, but these are much, much smaller in terms of the latency access characteristics. And we talked about some of the numbers. So in summary, CXL has the right features and the right architecture, the right level of abstraction, most importantly, very low barrier to entry to adopt things, to enable a broad and open ecosystem, right? Both are important, broad open ecosystem and an open ecosystem. And that will enable us to do heterogeneous computing, allow for a bunch of different memories to be put in the system. And also we provide with the right level of abstraction so that you can classify different memories differently and optimize your performance accordingly, and server disaggregation, right? So coherent interfaces, we leverage PCIe. And again, we only innovate where it makes sense. We want to really piggyback. We wanted to piggyback on PCI Express because it allowed us for the plug and play and all of those things that I talked about. We don't have to do any of the heavy lifting in terms of the PHY, in terms of the channels, in terms of even discovery for IO. All of those things, right, are completely leveraged from PCI Express. On top of that, we built low latency approach for .cas and .mem targeted at near CPU cache coherent latency. We expect it to be in the same ballpark, right? So if you're looking into, pick your favorite vendor, I can talk about our Intel CPUs. So for example, on our UPI link, whatever latency you see, we expect CXL CASMEM to have similar latency characteristics. We are talking about asymmetric complexity, which eases the burden of cache coherent interface designs, because as an accelerator or as a memory expansion developer, you need to really worry about a handful of things. You really are not in the business of orchestrating cache coherency across a wide plethora of designs. Right? That is the asymmetric nature of CXL. That is extremely valuable, keeps latency low, makes sure that backwards compatibility is going to work really well. Last but not the least, very important, it's an open industry standard with growing broad industry support, right? If you look at it, all CPU vendors are in CXL committed to it. All the memory vendors are in CXL. All the FPGA vendors are in CXL. All the GPGPU vendors are in CXL. You know, cloud service providers are there in CXL. OEMs, comm service provider, you saw the list, right? It's a very impressive list of companies that are fully committed to CXL. We are not stopping on the laurels with CXL 1.1 that we published in March. Q2 of 2019. March, we published 1.0. 1.1 was with compliance added to it. And we are doing the next generation, CXL 2.0, which we are, looks like we are on the final stretches. I'm keeping my fingers crossed. So this journey will continue. And looking at the types of companies that are there, the investments that we are getting, and the interest that is there, it's an ongoing journey. My take on it is, if you are not a member, please consider becoming a member. And thank you all for attending. I'm really glad to have you all as co-travelers on this journey. Stay safe, my friends. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. If you have questions about the material presented in this podcast, be sure and join our developers mailing list by sending an email to developers-subscribe@snea.org. Here you can ask questions and discuss this topic further with your peers in the storage developer community. For additional information about the Storage Developer Conference, visit www.storagedeveloper.org.